Hey, this is Meredith. While we take a couple of weeks off from producing new episodes of The Unfolding, we're sharing some of your favorites from the archives. When we produced this one at Christmas time in 2019, we really didn't know how it would be received. It's a little different from our typical episodes, but it turns out you loved it. In fact, page 31, Stories About Angels, it's one of our most downloaded episodes. So it began a tradition. Now, every Christmas, we gather real-life stories of angel encounters, and then we release those in a special episode. In fact, right now, we're working on this year's episode. So if you've got a story of an experience like this, let me know. Head over to the Unfolding Podcast Facebook page and send me a note. Next week, we're going to share another favorite from the archives, and then we'll be back on December 17th with page 111 of The Unfolding. And now, from the archives, page 31 of The Unfolding, it's all about angels.
This guy literally picked me up and carried me into the emergency room. And as he was walking out the door, this guy had to duck to go through a 7-foot door. All this stuff is starting to go through my mind. And I said, Father, thank you. You sent an angel.
And suddenly, there appeared with the angel a great multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest and on earth. Peace to men on whom his favor rests.
God's story has been unfolding.
Since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in the unfolding.
Hi, this is Meredith Foster. When my daughter was about 5, in a very matter-of-fact manner, she told me that she had seen angels. When she shared the story, it was clear that her assumption was that everyone saw angels. This experience was perfectly normal. I didn't tell her any differently. I was just curious. I wanted to see if that memory would stick with her. Well, over the next few years, the story would come up and she would repeat it with the exact same details. She was absolute, confident. She's a lot older now. A few months ago, that story came up in a conversation, and for the first time, she said, I used to be so sure it was real, but now, I don't know, it seems fuzzy. Growing older has brought with it some doubts. Could it have been true? The Bible makes it clear, angels are real. There are stories in the Old and New Testament. Angel encounters weren't common, but there's no question they're a part of God's kingdom. So that's left me wondering, do people still encounter angels today? That's the question we asked, and we got some wonderful answers, and we're going to share several of those stories with you. This episode of The Unfolding is a little different than usual. As we celebrate the Christmas story, including all the angel encounters for Zechariah and Mary and Joseph and the shepherds, we've asked the question, have you encountered an angel? Our first story is from Barry Copeland. Little background, Barry and his wife Gina had a group of friends who had never really been to church, didn't really have any background of faith. So they invited these couples to come to their house, hang out, talk about God, eat good food. One of those couples was Bill and Linda. When Barry would talk about Jesus, Bill and Linda didn't say much, but they kept coming back to the group, in part because Linda's mom had recently passed away, and they had questions about what happens after we die. And then Bill's dad became ill, and it was apparent he didn't have much time left. Bill knew that his dad wasn't a man of faith, and he was concerned about what that meant for him when he died. And that's where this story begins.
So Bill's wondering about his dad, and they're a nice Italian family, man. They're tight-knit, and they're very private. And other than ask for prayer for his dad, he didn't want to express this concern about the heaven or hell thing to anybody else. So he's got a brother. His brother's name is Phil. Phil was a kind of the crazy one in the family as far as partying and all that kind of stuff. And not even close to Christ either. But he had a wife who went to church every once in a while. And so he went to Phil and he said, hey, and he started stammering. He didn't have the words. He didn't know how to say, is dad saved? Is he a Christian? Has he accepted Christ? And so he's kind of stammering around. And Phil then says, are you talking about John 3:16? And Bill goes, yeah, I'm talking about John 3:16. I think they knew about John 3:16 because on the NFL games back and stuff, there'd always be somebody with a sign. But Phil says, are you talking about John 3:16? And he said, yeah, John 3:16. Can your wife talk to Dad about John 3:16? And John 3:16 kind of became their code word or their language for salvation. Phil goes, man, I don't know, but I'll talk to her. So Phil goes home. He tells his wife. She says, I'm not going to talk to him. She goes, I think you have to talk to him. And Phil's not a Christian. He's like, well, what am I going to say to him? So, well, I don't know, but yeah, you should be concerned. You know, I mean, we're talking about eternity, but you know, I think God wants you to talk to him. So he went to the hospital that night, and the place was busy. So he's looking for a break. He's looking for people to leave or to be alone with his dad. It stays busy all night. He ends up going home feeling guilty. His wife asked him. She said, no, I didn't have a chance. He goes, well, you better talk to him. He doesn't have much time left. And they went to bed. And in the middle of the night, Phil wakes up, and he looks at the clock, and it's 3:16 in the morning. And he kind of freaks out a little bit. He can't sleep. He wakes up and tells his wife. She goes, you better talk to him. That's God telling you. So he goes to the hospital the next night, and pretty much the same thing happens. He ends up not talking. He goes home, tells her again. The next night, he wakes up. It's 3:16 in the morning, and his wife wakes up at the same time and looks at the clock. Both of them are looking at the clock, and it's 3:16. He goes to the hospital the next night. Everybody leaves. The room is empty, and he's trying to get the words together in his head, and he's trying to get up the guts, and he's about to talk to his dad when a chaplain walks in. And he thought, oh, great, this is like the cavalry came coming in right at the right time, you know. And the chaplain did whatever the chaplain does and turns around and leaves. And he follows the chaplain out. He says, hey, you know, my dad, I don't know if he's going to go to heaven or not. Can you talk to him about John 3:16? And she says, I think God wants you to talk to him, which he didn't want to hear. He goes back in again, and then he's about to chicken out. Right then, this guy walks in. He's a maintenance worker. And he's got a hat on, a cap on that has some kind of religious thing on the front. And he was going to work on the heaters. And so he bends over to work on this thing. And on the back of the cap, along that strap, it says John 3:16. And so for like 25 minutes, it's like a neon light going off. And in Phil's mind, he's like, hey, this guy's got to be a Christian, and maybe he's here to talk to Dad. The guy gets done working, and he says, hey, are you a Christian? And this guy, and I guess there's some kind of a presence about this guy that was unusual. He said, well, yeah, I am, kind of. And he says, well, he goes, I just saw your hat. And he goes, oh, yeah, I got that at a yard sale. So Phil kind of explained to him what's going on, and there's something very gentle about this guy. He goes, I really think that you're the one to have to talk to your dad about it. Then he literally turns, looks at his dad, and he looks back, and that guy is gone. And Phil then goes out into the hallway to find him, and he's nowhere to be found. Phil tried to figure it out, and there was just, again, there's this presence of God about this guy. Phil ended up leading his dad to the Lord right there. And he had the words, and he didn't even know where the words came from. He said that there was something about the presence of this guy that filled him and gave him the words of the Holy Spirit came into the situation. And his father acknowledged that, you know, they did a sinner's prayer. And none of us really know exactly what was said. Here's the thing. I'm getting this story after the fact. I'm getting this at the funeral home. And Phil is standing there. It's the first time I had ever met him. And he's just nodding his head, acknowledging the facts, and in tears as this is all going on, as the story is being told to me. And so anyway, so we're at the funeral home, and this whole family of essentially agnostics, they're all happy as a lark because the word has gotten through to this family that Dad accepted Christ before he died. And Phil, of all the people, had talked to him about it. Well, I'll tell you what, there's a lot of stories since then. A lot of the family members now have accepted Christ. Phil is a Jesus freak. And Bill and Linda are leading neighbors to Christ. It transformed their family. Just this one moment with this one guy with a hat on that had John 3:16 written across the band and just some words that he said to Phil.
When I was about the year between 13 and 14, I had a few unexplained seizures, grand mal seizures, and they never completely figured out why I had them, what triggered them, or anything like that. Never had any since. I'm 28 now, so it's been about 15 years since I last had one. And the first one happened and I was with my family. And the second seizure, I was out with a group of friends. It was my freshman year of high school. And we were starting off the night by going to the football game, the high school football game, right around the corner from my house. And we got there early because we wanted to get good seats because we had friends on the team. So we were in line waiting for the gates to open so we could go in. And as we were standing there, I started getting, it's called an aura, basically, when you are about to have a seizure. But it's basically all your vision starts to pixelate and get really sparkly, almost, is the best way I can think of to explain it. You start feeling really lightheaded, and it's often for people who experience seizures, the warning sign that they're about to experience an episode. So I could feel that happening, but I was still so new to having these experiences that I didn't totally know what to chalk it up to, but I was like, something is off. And then when it started to kind of all click, I finally realized, uh-oh, I better tell someone because my friends don't know what to do. So I need to tell somebody. And right at that point, I went down and everything went black for me. So I don't remember what happened at that point, but I was around probably 500 other people all waiting to get into the game. And when I came to, I immediately knew what had happened. And I remember I said, oh, crap, when I woke up, because I was laying on the ground in the grass and there were people all around, but I couldn't see my friends immediately and I wasn't totally sure what was going on. But I did notice that one of the coaches for the football team had come over by my side, was kneeling next to me, holding my hand. And when I woke up, he said, Christy, everything is okay. You're all right. You're safe. Your parents have been called. The paramedics are on their way. You're going to be okay. We're going to take care of you. You don't need to worry. And I just remember feeling, despite the fact that I was feeling embarrassment too, being a freshman in high school, surrounded by peers and friends, seeing this semi-embarrassing incident, I just felt very at peace. And I didn't know the coach personally, but knowing that there was someone who was a trained professional next to me looking after me was so comforting. And he said he'd been praying and believed that everything would be okay and that God saw me and I was not alone. And at that moment, I just felt totally at peace. It started to dawn on me. I didn't know where my friends were, and I found that strange because I thought they would be right near me. But within a few minutes, the paramedics showed up and the ambulance came. They loaded me up. And as they were closing the doors, the coach was right there and said, you're going to be okay. And just reminded me that God was watching and he saw me. And then he was the one who closed the door. And I got over to the hospital and sure enough, I was fine. My parents were there. They met up with me. My friends came over as well. And later on, when I was not so woozy anymore, because typically after you have a seizure, you're pretty foggy in your brain for a while. So I told my parents and my friends that just the thing that had meant so much to me was this coach who, like minutes before the game was about to start, had come over and taken the time to reassure me, make sure everything was okay, and help orchestrate everything that needed to happen. And my friends, especially because they were there, looked at each other and were very confused. And they said, Christy, there was no coach with you. There was nobody next to you except us. We were all sitting in a circle around you and trying to pray for you and be there to comfort you. And I hadn't known that they were sitting around me. I had no recollection of that. All I remembered was the coach being next to me. But with them sitting right next to me, they would have known if there had been a coach who came around. And they had zero memory of that. They didn't see anybody.
And you could remember what he looked like?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can still picture his face today. He had blue eyes. He had sandy brown hair. He was wearing a green polo. And I remember his voice. And I just remember feeling so calm with him. Like, all of those details are very vivid to me, and I don't know why, but I have almost a snapshot in my head of a little few-second clip just playing over and over in my head of that moment, and I can still see his face.
Wow.
And so I've never been able to explain it in any way other than just that my heart has always felt that it must have been God sending an angel to just be there to comfort and reassure me and let me know that I wasn't alone. And it's always been a really special memory for me, and it's one that's hard to explain to people sometimes. A lot of people have been like, oh, well, you were woozy, you maybe were imagining things, and I don't know exactly how to talk it up except for that whatever it was, God didn't let me feel afraid that day, and it was a pretty special moment for me.
So I don't remember exactly how old I was. I was in elementary school. I remember just flashes of what happened. I just remember that my parents had this big black conversion van, you know, with the ladder on the back, and it was, you know, the pull-out bed. And my mom was driving with a friend of hers, and we were coming back from a church event. And our church at the time was a little further away, and the van was full of all the kids. And so my mom said that she remembered turning this corner and it was a highway and the van just died. And she began to feel afraid. And she said she remembers feeling like someone could just turn the corner and run into us. And this was a dangerous position to be in. I remember too, Meredith, I remember that it was pitch black outside. I remember that. So she got out of the car, and a guy in a little car had come up behind her and said, I can jump your car for you. And she said she remembered looking at his car and thinking, how is this little car going to jump this big van? And I remember seeing his face, and I remember he was probably in his 30s, and he just had a serious look on his face, and I can still remember it. And so he jumped her van, and she turned around to say thank you, and the car had disappeared. And there was no sign of the young man or the car. And she said, that was an angel. God sent to us, you know, in the midst of the time when we needed help. And to this day, she'll still tell you, you know, I know that was an angel because he was just gone.
We'll be back with more stories in just a moment, including a supernatural encounter in Manhattan on 9/11. But first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute. Habib, I have had my kids tell me, but I'm not a leader, Mom. So-and-so is a leader on the volleyball team. Can anybody be a leader?
Absolutely. Given the right circumstances and the push, I was the most unlikely leader. I was the shyest guy in the world. And I was thrust to the front counter at Arby's, and my small adversity made me come out of my shell. May the Lord not give you adversity. May you choose to pursue leadership without having that adversity.
But I think probably for some folks who are even listening now, they've already been thrust into that place of adversity, and they're going to have to sink or swim. What are the things that they can do, and how can you help them, especially through your website and other ways that can help them swim?
Adversity could make you or break you. You can be bitter or better. The professional development helps them focus on the best part of what they went through. And so if they go to the website, they will see a lot of inspirational ideas.
Ideas about leadership and more, just to inspire you that anybody can be a leader. And they can find your website at?
HabibHabib.com. H-A-B-E-E-B. HabibHabib.com.
And now a few more stories of angels.
I've been a contractor all my life, and I accidentally, by a freak accident, shot myself in the leg with a nailing gun.
Oh.
And it was so bad that I couldn't move my leg. It was straight. And so, thank God, back then, I had a Dodge with a straight seat in it. I didn't have buckets or anything, and so I was able to get into the right side of the truck and then slide over to the left, and I drove myself to the hospital. And the cool thing is that when I got to the hospital, I couldn't just lay on the horn, you know, because it's a hospital, you know. The whole time I'm praying anyway, and I said, Lord, I said, please just send someone to me to help me to get into the emergency room, because I was in a lot of pain. I no more than prayed that, and I was pulling up around the bend, and here's a parking spot right there. And just as I pulled myself out of the truck, the guy comes up and says, you need a hand? And I said, yeah. I said, I'd really like it. This guy, now, Meredith, I weigh 240, 250 pounds. And this guy literally picked me up and carried me into the emergency room. And so he carried me in and he put me in a chair and he said, this guy needs help real quick. And he said, well, if there's anything else I can do for you. I said, no. I said, you've been a tremendous help. And so I told him, I said, you know, I really appreciate what you did. I said, you're an answer to God's prayers. And as he was walking out the door, if you know the Bible, you know that the angels that God has are huge. They're not little people. They're big people. And the Bible talks about how big they are in certain places. And this guy had to duck to go through a 7-foot door. And when he walked out, I never thought nothing of it, you know, because I was in pain and everything. But after I got a shot to take the pain away, all this stuff is starting to go through my mind. And I said, Father, thank you. You sent an angel. You know, that verse that says, be careful what you say and do, for you may be entertaining angels. This was it. I just broke down. And that was 15 years ago. But I'll never forget it.
Tell me a little bit about what was going on in your life when this happened. How old were you?
When this happened, I was about 18. It was 18 or 19. I was a very new Christian. I'd only been a Christian at that point for a year. And I struggled a lot with just wanting to take my life. Even right before I came to Christ, it was just always these thoughts that tormented me. And, you know, things were just hard, difficult, my typical teenage life. But this particular night, I went to a Christmas Eve service with some friends, new Christian friends, and I had just lost a really good friend to cancer. She was 18. And I'm like, I don't understand this God stuff. This is really hard. And I went to the Christmas Eve service expecting to feel comforted. And I guess I just didn't. And I came home that night from Christmas Eve, and it was late. My friends dropped me off, and I had been thinking all through, you know what, I'm done with life. It's hard. I don't feel loved. I'm missing my friend. I had another friend that had passed away that was like a father figure, pastor, a couple weeks before that. So I just thought, you know what, maybe this is the night that I'm just going to check out. And so when I got home, the family was all had loud music going on. They're laughing and they're like, why are you so down? So you lost a friend. It's not like, you know, and I just remember thinking, what? Where's the support? God, where are you? So I said, fine. And I knew the music was really loud. So I knew I could go upstairs. I'm going to go in the bathroom. I'm done. God, I am so done. I'm going to go upstairs and I'm just going to end it all because life is pain. And that's where I was. And I went up into that bathroom and I'm angry. And all the way up the stairs, the music was loud. So I'm yelling. I'm like, God, I am so mad at you. I don't get it. I don't like it. Where's the hope? And I went into that bathroom and I closed the door and I went to grab the razor. And as soon as I went to grab it, I just felt this force go and throw me on the floor. I mean, like, push me down on the floor. And I felt something holding me. And let me, what is this? Let me go. Let me go. I'm going to do it. And I just had this, I can't explain it, but in my young Christian mind, not knowing anything, this was like an encounter I had with God where I just pictured this throne in front of me. And I heard this voice say, I'm big enough to take your anger and I'm not going to let you do this. And I had this vision in my head where I'm like, what is this that I'm seeing? I could see these angel wings just around me. And I'm like, what do you mean? I am so mad. And he goes, I can take it. I'm big enough. And I just felt like the Lord kept saying, okay, tell me more. I'm not going to let you go. And I was so mad. I remember just thinking, I can't move. I can't get to do the thing I want to do. And then it was like the Holy Spirit or something just came over me and I just started crying and I just started weeping. And it changed to all of a sudden feeling this loving presence and this loving Father. And it's not that I wasn't still angry about everything that was going on. It was just this desire to leave this life slowly faded into the backdrop. And I'll never forget that night. I mean, I talk about it now and I still remember like it was yesterday, like last night. And I remember just coming down to my family who had no idea, my sisters and everybody sitting around just celebrating Christmas. I'm like, wow, they had no idea what it's about to. Thank you, Lord. And I remember just opening up to my friends a few weeks. They're like, wow, we had no idea. Why didn't you tell us? But you know, God took care of it. What a presence. And I'll just never forget seeing those angel wings and feeling that force. He wasn't going to let me do it. That's how much he was showing me, how much he loved me, that he was fighting for me.
If you ever sat up late at night and watched QVC, then you may have spent some time with Dan Wheeler, a very popular host on the QVC network for 29 years. His life changed dramatically when his wife, Beth, was diagnosed with cancer. She fought a 3-year battle, and Dan's written a book about that experience called Hurricane of Love. Near the end of Beth's life, when she had decided to forego any more treatment, they had a supernatural experience that Dan describes in the book. Here's Dan.
One chapter is called An Angel in My Driveway, and I play in a classic rock band that raises money for charities. We don't take any money, but I play bass and guitar, and I always knew I was in this band to reach this one guy. His name's John, and we became really good friends over the years, and when it was becoming apparent that Beth was dying, when she stopped treatment, I started calling people and bringing them in, flying them in from all over the country, family and friends. And this was when I finally reached out to people, because everybody said, anything you need, call me. So I started calling people and just saying, I need you to go to the airport. My home is over an hour away from the Philadelphia airport, and I didn't want to leave Beth. And so I just called John. I said, I need you to pick up my buddy. His name is Brian. And they dropped Brian off. It was probably 11:30, close to midnight. And we're standing in my driveway with John, the guy in my band, his wife, and Brian. And I noticed John wasn't saying anything, and I thought he kind of had a weird look on his face. And when they left, I said to Brian, I said, was John okay on the way from the airport? And Brian said, man, he talked my ear off. We talked, we laughed, and he said, yeah. And I go, I guess he was just tired. And we went in and went to sleep. And the next morning, I walk out to get coffee, and my sister said, you have to call your neighbor Dana. John saw something. I'm like, okay. So I called Dana, who's John's friend. She works with him, and she said, John needs to talk to you. So I called John. He said, yeah, I have to tell you something. Can I come over tonight? I said, sure, come over. So after work, I met him out in my driveway. I hopped in his car. I said, John, what's up? What did you see? And he said, Dan, I know you know I've done a lot of drugs in my day, but I know what I saw. And he said, I also know that you know I'm not a spiritual person. I hardly believe in anything, but I know what I saw. I go, John, what did you see? He goes, well, while you were talking last night, he said, this being appeared right over you, right behind you. I said, a being? What do you mean? He said, well, it was like had a cloak. I couldn't see a face, but it looked like a robe, but it was so bright. He said the light was shimmering, and with his hands, it was like light dancing off of water. And he said, I had to close my eyes. I couldn't look. It was so bright. And when I opened my eyes, you were talking, and it was gone. He said, but as you spoke, it appeared again, right over you. And again, this time I had to look away. And like he said, I thought it was going to burn my eyeballs. It was so bright. I said, John, what do you think it was? And he said, I think it was an angel. I said, John, I know it was. You know, there's so much prayer going on in that bedroom. I think there's angels all around us. Well, after he left, I stood in the spot where he saw the angel, and I thought, wow, he was given a gift. And then as I walked in, I realized so was I. It was my birthday. It was my 61st birthday. And I remember my sister said, why did John see an angel? Why didn't we? And I said, Mary Jane, we don't need to see an angel. We know they're here. We walk by faith and not by sight.
And there, as you can see, perhaps the second tower, the front tower, is collapsing.
The day started like so many other work days that I prepared for going into the city. I got up, prepared to catch my hour-and-a-half train ride from Long Island to Manhattan, and then walked a few blocks down 34th Street past some very famous New York City landmarks like Macy's Department Store and the Empire State Building. And then shortly after that, my office is located on Park Avenue. So as many people know, it was a Tuesday. It was a very clear, sunny morning, very, very gorgeous day, actually. During my walk, I usually take a look down Fifth Avenue as one of the cross streets. And when you look downtown on Fifth Avenue, you can catch a glimpse of the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center. When I got to the office and I took the elevator up to the 23rd floor and began to prepare for the day, as the staff was arriving, you know, we just generally engage in small talk. It was about then that the routine of the day was abruptly changed when one of my colleagues came up to me and said that a small plane had crashed into the World Trade Center. Well, we went over to the windows facing downtown and saw in the distance a slightly angled smoking silhouette, is how I describe it, of a plane that struck the tower. Prior to working at my current position, I worked in the airline business for 13 years. When I saw the imprint of the crash, I said to myself, this was not a small private airplane that hit the building. The imprint seemed more to be like that of a larger aircraft. And soon eyewitnesses confirmed that it was an airliner. In fact, it was American Flight 11. So instinctively, I grabbed a camera that we had in our department, and I began taking photos from the conference room window. As I was taking a few photos and just kind of observing and talking with colleagues and discussing, you know, what could have possibly happened, that's when I saw the second tower struck and a large plume of fire exploding from the south tower at about 9 o'clock. Actually, I think it was 9:05. And then we learned that it was no accident, but actually a full-scale attack on our nation. Shortly thereafter, we heard about the hijackings that were taking place around the country of passenger aircraft. Then we heard that the Pentagon in Washington was hit, and soon thereafter, United Flight 93 crashed in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. So we all hung around the office a little bit, really not knowing what to do and expecting to hear some announcements, and soon we did, that those who wished to go home were free to go. And shortly thereafter, our HR department said that they were going to be closing the building and that if you wanted to leave the building, you weren't able to come back in. So some people stayed overnight and some went to the trains, which is what I did. We learned that it wasn't so easy to get out of the city after all of this was taking place. If you commute from Long Island in New Jersey, you know that during a normal day, it could be rather chaotic. But at this time, the streets in Manhattan were just very strange feeling because there were no cars, there were no taxis, there was no commuter activity taking place, and all we saw was a stream of emergency vehicles that were racing downtown. My colleague Joe and I decided to head towards Penn Station to catch our train home, but everything was shut down. And of course, the concerns were that there were going to be possible other terrorist attacks on the railroad tunnels, on the trains themselves. We didn't know what was going on. The entire railroad system in and out of Manhattan was shut down. In fact, the whole city, as you can imagine, was in a lockdown. The street along 7th Avenue, where Penn Station is located, between 34th and 33rd Streets, quite a long street, the entire 7th Avenue was packed with people. But all the entrances to the tracks were completely closed down. There were thousands of people in the streets. As we watched, in a very surreal way, fighter planes flying over the city because of possible other targets that may have been designated by the terrorists. As we're standing in the streets, we're thinking, you know, we're just a few blocks away from the Empire State Building. The Statue of Liberty is not too far away, and we're thinking, well, perhaps there'll be attacks on bridges and other possible targets. It was just a very uncertain time, and certainly people were very concerned and worried about what was going on. So in an atmosphere that was filled with a lot of uncertainty, all we can do is wait for the first opportunity to get out of town, make our way home, and of course, do a lot of praying in the meantime to see what was going to transpire at that time.
Wow.
So as I was standing at the 33rd Street end of 7th Avenue, there were hundreds and thousands of people really just packing the streets. It was a very chaotic moment, but personally, I wasn't feeling very anxious or nervous. I just knew that, you know, all we had to do is get to the trains, and this way it would get us out of the city. So while I and thousands of other people were waiting, hoping for the train station to reopen, I'm just standing there, and I heard a voice, and I heard an announcement that was so clear to me that it was an amazing experience. And the announcement was that they just opened the 34th Street entrance to the train station. So I kind of paused for a moment. I didn't see anyone moving or rushing to get to the entrance. And I thought that was strange because here we were waiting for the station to open up. And when this announcement came, nobody was moving. So I knew what I heard. The voice was so clear to me that it was not to be mistaken. So I moved slowly through the crowd, of course, you know, shoulder to shoulder as it was so packed. And I was thinking, well, by the time I get to the entrance, the place is going to be mobbed and I'm not going to be able to get down the escalator. To my amazement, as I turned the corner just to get down to the station, I was still amazed that the crowd had not formed on the stairways or the escalators to catch a train. I said, didn't people hear the announcement? So for a split second, I even doubted that an announcement was made that the train station was open.
When you heard the announcement, did it sound like, was it in the voice and the tone that sounded like normal announcements there?
It didn't sound like a voice over a loudspeaker. It sounded like somebody was in the crowd of people making the announcement saying they just opened the gates to the 34th Street entrance. And that's what I heard. And I didn't respond like immediately. I just kind of hesitated because I said, you know what, with all these people here, there's just no way I'm going to make it to the other end of the street.
Yeah.
But sure enough, nobody was moving. And I said, you know what, I'm going to listen to that voice and I'm going to check it out.
Wow.
And sure enough, it was the gate was open, the doors were open. And like I said, I was among the first people actually walking down to catch some of the first trains that were leaving Manhattan that day. So, you know, again, I was kind of puzzled. And then knowing that the Lord was with me that day and that, you know, I was going to get out one way or another, I was certain that this voice, this announcement was for me to make my way there before the crowd actually got there.
Wow.
And sure enough, I was thankful that I heard the announcement, and I was even more thankful that the voice that I heard helped me get home on that very infamous day. Then I thought, you know, the Bible talks a lot about, and I'm not going to say that, well, this was an angel or this was, you know, someone giving me a special instruction. But then, you know, as a believer, we do believe that there are angels. We do know that angels are messengers. It actually says in Psalm chapter 91, for the Lord says, because he loves you, he will rescue you and for those who make his name great. And then it says in Psalm 91, verse 11, he says, for he orders his angels to protect you wherever you go. And I said, you know something? That's so true. And even though we may not understand, and even in the most chaotic of situations, the Lord will speak to us and he will help us through every situation. So with that, I said, you know what, Lord, you are great. And I'm so thankful that I have a relationship with you so that I can hear your voice when you speak. And it was really that experience that showed me and that confirmed in my heart that the Lord was with me.
Thanks to Barry, Christy, Danielle, Wies, Lynn, Mel, and Dan for sharing their stories with us. There's a Bible verse that suggests many more of us may have encountered angels, and we don't even know it. In Hebrews 13:2, it says, do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. That's amazing to even think about, isn't it? So as I mentioned at the beginning, right now we're working on the 2021 edition of Angel Stories for the Unfolding. So if listening to this episode has reminded you of a story, we would love to hear about it. Head over to the Unfolding Podcast Facebook page and let us know. Thanks to producer Jason Rakow and our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H-Squared Leadership Institute. Find out how to unleash the full power of your leadership potential at HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in The Unfolding.